Alrighty, so welcome to the Building Heroes podcast. My name is Shelby Ruiz, and I'm the research associate at the Integrated Design and Construction Lab from Washington State University. We are very excited today to have our first episode of the 2024 season, Vaughan Timbers. We have Russ Vaughan and Joshua Schultz on the phone with us today. I'll give them a moment here to introduce themselves in just a second, but today we're going to be talking about the timber industry, what that means for design and construction, how timber and mass timber and as a material is going to be very important as the construction industry moves forward, also as we consider climate in the built environment. This podcast, like all of our podcasts, is sponsored by NEA, which is the Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance. You can find more about them at betterbricks.com. And why don't we have Russ start with an introduction, who you are, what you do, where you came from, and what you're doing now.
Well, thank you, Shelby. I'm Russ Vaughan with Vaughan Timbers. I'm from Colville, Washington, which is about a little over 2 hours north of the WSU campus in Pullman. And it's quite a bit different here, lots of forests and mountains, very much like what people think of North Idaho and Western Montana, mountains and trees and lakes and rivers. So my family's been here for four generations. Actually, my great grandfather homesteaded here. And so we've had a long history with the land, which ended up becoming a forest products business, Vaughan Brothers Lumber, that I was part of for most of the early part of my career. I also graduated from Washington State University. I have a business degree there. So it's great to be back connected with WSU's campus and everything you guys are doing. And so from those early beginnings in managing the land and taking care of the land, my family's forest products business, I wanted to find a way to get the best value for these products that are out there and the way we manage forests. And we've done things a lot differently than we'd done them in the past. I think in the past, it was an extraction-based industry where you just saw what the land could provide. You took the trees and you made products out of it and you replanted those trees so they could be sustainable from that standpoint. But we've grown in our awareness of our landscape. And so we've spent a lot of time figuring out how to work in concert with it and to be sustainable from a aesthetic standpoint, and instead of just making sure we're planting enough trees to grow more, we're actually doing forest restoration on federal lands. The mills have become very focused on utilizing small diameter logs to make these products. And after years of doing that, supplying the commodity industry, I had always thought that there was a value-added proposition out there. And then mass timber and CLT was created. And after some investigation on that, I decided to leave Vaughan Brothers Lumber, where I was the vice president and overseeing operations there, to start Vaughan Timbers. And so we're right next door. And what we think we're doing now is finding the highest and best use for this material. So we're really showing off what we can do by managing the forests appropriately. And so that's what I do. And I love being in the Northwest. And besides catching WSU football games from time to time, we like to recreate here on the water, in the mountains in the wintertime when we've got enough snow, skiing, that kind of thing. So that's who I am. And that's what Vaughan Brothers Timbers, at least the intro level, is doing in this space.
Joshua, do you want to introduce yourself next? And then we'll kind of talk about like wood products and what that means.
You bet. Thanks, Shelby. So my name, like you said, is Joshua Schultz. I'm the current technical director at Vaughan Timbers. And I think a little bit of background is helpful because it's going to probably tie into some of the discussions we have about some of the uniqueness at Vaughan specifically and in the wood industry in general. And so, sort of my background there, I oversee both the material side of things, so the actual fabrication, but then also the engineering design side of things. And so in order to understand that, maybe we go back about 10 years and we'll do this quickly. But basically, you know, my background, I'm a trained and licensed professional engineer. My specialty is in structural engineering. So I'm a buildings person. And I first got exposed to mass timber over a decade ago when I was working with a large firm out of Chicago, SOM. And so at that time, mass timber in general was something that was done overseas, primarily in Europe, and it was pretty underdeveloped in the US. And so I had an opportunity to work with the SLB, which is the Softwood Lumber Board, and SOM to start developing what mass timber looks like there. So got to work with many people in the Chicago office, a practicing engineer. Also happen to have some advanced degrees. So I have my doctorate and things like that. So also serve as a professor as well. So that's kind of, you know, who I am, what I am, and in the context of our conversation today.
Great. Thank you, guys. I want to give a quick background too, because the Integrated Design and Construction Lab, we typically work a lot with high performance buildings and the occupants within those buildings, the people that operate those buildings. So I know we're probably going to get some questions as to what the heck we're doing with a bunch of wood guys, and not to reduce you guys to wood guys. You guys are so much more than wood guys, but it is a little bit left field for us. So I just wanted to give some context that we not only have a grad student that is doing some research in this area, Sierra, who is wonderful, but also we're a part of a number of different groups of folks in Spokane that do mass timber projects. So we got looped in with you guys through Blockhouse Life, which is a really intimate kind of boutique, small scale residential community. And then we've just kind of been in touch ever since then. So which of you, and this might have to be a heavy timber 101 for those of our listeners who have no idea what we're about to be talking about. Who wants to introduce this concept of engineered wood products and what that means materially when you get it to a construction site?
Engineered wood products have been around for quite some time. That would encompass things like, even going back to like plywood and OSB, but more so I-joists, laminated veneer lumber. There's things called parallel laminated lumber. There's all kinds of different things. And then there's glulam beams, which a lot of people are very aware of. And then more recently, adding in things like cross-laminated timber. And then there's even mass plywood panels now as well. So that's just a veneer-based mass timber. And the difference in what we used to do and what we're doing now is the panelized nature of CLT, cross-laminated timber, and others. In our case, that's up to 60 feet long and 4 feet wide. There's others that have different sizes. It allows you to have a more modular type of build. You're layering in what was a bunch of construction materials together into a factory-built option that can be put in place. And so instead of having a bunch of lumber, or maybe lumber and plywood and drywall and framing, and having all those people on site, we can now do a lot of those things in the factory and deliver something that is structural, and in many cases also an architectural finish, so it can be finished as it is. But I think the real key part about that is if we are harvesting these materials in a sustainable way, we've got not only a very beautiful and functional building and material, we've also got an eco-friendly material. And you put all that together, a lot of times people are willing to accept trade-offs when it comes to using something that might be eco-friendly. The beauty of mass timber is it really elevates the structure. The design is beautiful. People love it. It's got that real high-end feel. It creates an intimate feel because there's a biophilic nature of wood. It's a, you know, living kind of thing. You don't see people touching a lot of these other composite materials to have that warmth connection with like you do with wood. So there's a lot of reasons why mass timber is kind of the evolution in an engineered wood product from just things that we would otherwise have made for furniture or something decorative. Now you're taking and you're making not only the bones of the building, but also the inner aspects of it that people really love to see. And so I think that's where mass timber is different than just the traditional engineered wood products that might be used to build something more efficiently, but might have been covered up. Mass timber is kind of an outward expression of that and kind of tying it together.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think kind of that evolution is helpful. Most people are probably familiar at least with 2x4s, 2x6s, stick building. That's still how a lot of residential is built. And I'm sure we'll circle back to modular construction and efficiencies and things like that. But most people are probably familiar with 2x4s, 2x6s, stick frame construction. And so, you know, Russ was talking about the sort of evolution, which, by the way, Washington State has been a leader in North America for almost as long as the materials existed, in particular WSU. I think the big thing with mass timber compared to that stick framing is fundamentally you're taking, let's say, 2x6s, so 2x6 pieces of wood, and you're layering those, you're gluing those up in one of two ways. One, which is like the glue lam, where you take 2x6s, you stack them up, and you glue them together to make giant beams. The alternative would be like a CLT, which is sort of the panel construction. And again, if you haven't seen this in person, maybe you've played the party game Jenga, right? And so you have a Jenga style tower where basically you have these pieces of wood and every layer is rotated 90 degrees. So imagine now that Jenga style tower is made out of giant 2x6s and they're layered up together and they're glued to make these giant panels. And the beauty of the panels is that efficiency, I think. And so two things just to kind of tie that up then is the nice part about the mass timber is that from a material perspective, what you're doing is you're taking wood, which has a lot of advantages, right? Sustainable, it's a natural resource, it's renewable, da, 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 da. However, nothing's completely perfect. And so wood is it's a highly variable material. It has knots, it has defects, it has all these types of things. So the neat part about mass timber, you can imagine, is kind of like if we think of Swiss cheese, right? So if you have one slice of Swiss cheese, there's going to be holes in there and you're going to be able to see through that. But if we take and we layer multiple slices of that cheese together, the holes will start to cover up. And so that's kind of what we do with mass timber is we're taking pieces of wood that do have some defects to them. And the way we layer them up actually gives you a stronger, a better material than you would have had by itself. There's kind of a beautiful sort of, you know, poetic image there, right? Like of bringing those sort of diverse pieces, layering them up, and then they reinforce and you get a better product. So that's one thing. And then I think the other thing too, just to speak to what Russ was saying, is the nice part about mass timber also has to do with this efficiency. And so you're building these things in a factory and you're doing it in a very refined way. And so even in terms of the amount of material, next time you're driving down the road and you see a residential building being built out of sticks, check out the dumpster and see how much wood is getting cut off. And so what we're able to do in a factory for mass timber is we design that, we lay that out more optimally, just so that right off the bat, we're not wasting as much wood. So I'd say those are two real key things there. And hopefully that kind of helps tie that all together.
That was a great explanation from both of you. Thank you guys. To your point about like optimizing your process, can one of you guys describe like from the very, very beginning of starting to build a product at Vagen, something that you guys actually make, what does that look like? Whether that's CLT or, you know, a glue lam beam, from, you know, getting it out of the forest to actually installing it on site. What's that process like?
Yeah, I can touch on that. I think it does start with the forest. And I think we all need to recognize that. But it's easy to get lost because so many manufacturing facilities have to be located in places where the workforce is, or have you, and it may not be near its raw material home. We're very fortunate in that we're located in the general vicinity of where our materials are they originate from. So we get material from within the majority within, let's say, 20 miles, and then it goes out to maybe 50 miles is the vast majority of all the materials that are received. And they go to Vaughan Brothers Lumber, their mill in Colville, which I can see outside of my window here. They process those logs into commodity products. And then we work with them to create the products that come into our facility. And primarily that's a 2x6. We take the trees, come out of the forest. A big chunk of what we do is federal land forest restoration. You'll find that most of the tree species, Western larch, ponderosa pine, and some of the others, are fire-dependent species. So they have a thick bark, and they have a canopy that naturally prunes itself up. So it can withstand the understory burns of wildfires that are beneficial for the landscape. They don't get too hot. They basically burn all the excess grasses and brush. They don't dig into that biomass that's on the forest floor. They're very beneficial. So what happens is we're trying to mimic what Mother Nature was doing originally. So these stewardship projects go and they thin these forests out. They take that material, which is a byproduct of forest restoration and healthy forests, take them to the sawmill. The sawmill turns them into lumber products that could either be used for framing, like Joshua said, the 2x4 and 2x6 is traditional stick framing, or they can be used as a raw material source to create cross-laminated timber and glulam beams. Many people call cross-laminated timber a big timber sandwich because you have the long pieces and then you cross it in the center. So now you've got two-directional stability. You put it into a press, and then that big panel comes out the other side, and then it goes to a CNC machine to make all the final fabrication cuttings. Then we sand it and make it ready for the customer. So we wanted to start where the benchmark of technology was. And so that's what we did. And we've got equipment from Europe and all over the world in here so we can make these things efficiently. But that's also growing and evolving. And we see that changing as we go forward here. But that's the process by which trees come out of the forest, they get turned into lumber, we turn them into mass timber, and then from there they go onto the job site.
That's a very comprehensive explanation. Thank you, Russ. Just to summarize that, Russ, it sounds like when you're pulling from these forests, there's not only a level of, you know, management and maintenance and stewardship that goes back into those environments, but does either of you know how good of a state our state's forests are in right now using that metric of level 3 or level 1 just for kind of a baseline?
Yeah, the state of Washington Department of Natural Resources did an analysis, and it wasn't exactly condition class 1, 2, and 3, but what they did was how many acres are in a state that needs attention immediately at wildfire risk. And it's millions of acres. It's the majority of acres east of the Cascades. We've actually had there was always a percentage of forests, even before there was management of these forests, that were in a condition class 3. That is a thing that happens when you have prolonged periods of drought, or you have, in some cases even, you would get a prolonged number of years of more moist forests. So you get more vegetation built up and less frequent fire activity. There's a book out called The Big Burn. A lot of people talk about that. 1910 and 1929 were two significant fire events in the inland forests, the Intermountain West. And that changed federal policy on the way that we handle wildfire. So a lot of people died in these fires. And so the public good was to put out wildfires when they started. And so we did that. And at the same time, we didn't coordinate it really well, but we were managing these forests from a product standpoint. So we were putting out fires and we were cutting down trees. We can argue how good or bad that was done at the time, but that was happening. So while that was going on, we weren't really creating more of this condition class three environment. But if we were like the wilderness areas, and this is kind of an unfortunate reaction, but we were putting out these fires, we had smoke jumpers, we were putting out fires everywhere. What was allowing the fuels to build up? I would say in the late 60s and through the 70s, there was kind of this growing environmental movement, people concerned about the aesthetics and what harm might be doing to the environment. And so what happened then is there was a push to start doing things differently or stop doing things altogether. And in the early 90s, that kind of hit a boiling point. People call them the timber wars. I actually did a TED talk on this topic. It created a situation where the Forest Service just stopped managing the forest while at the same time continuing to put out wildfire. So it's created this perfect storm as we move ahead, where we've got these large acres of contiguous forests in our Intermountain West that have been having wildfires put out for decades, and then we stopped harvesting. So I think in a perfect world, we would have gone back and said, "Hey, let's redo the way we're managing these forests. Let's right-size the management so we're doing what these fires are intending to do on the landscape, which is keep these forests thinned out, keep these big trees at these wider spacing. And as the trees grow up, we can cut them and use them, but let's leave these forests intact." We could have built an economy around that. But what we did is we stopped. And now we've got this situation where we've got, catastrophic levels of fuels in our forest. And in order to save the forest, we need to thin them out. And so that's where we come in. We've got technology now that allows the mills to cut those small logs, and then we can take the products from that and put them into these eco-friendly buildings. When you look at it from a carbon standpoint, we're actually taking carbon that is consumed by the trees as they're growing. They're put into the solid mass of the tree. It's cut into boards, and then we're putting it back together and storing it for the life of the building. And so when you look at it from that standpoint, it's really a beautiful solution to some of the challenges we're facing as we look at, carbon pollution, removal of greenhouse gases, and the built environment. I think there's a lot to love here, regardless of your viewpoint of the topic. It's one of those things that can be a win-win-win, and we're excited about being part of that and educating people as we go. So.
Awesome. Great explanation. Thanks again. Joshua, this may be a topic for you, but kind of piggybacking off of what Russ was saying as far as how much work there is to do in this industry and moving our built environment world towards something like this. As a construction material, how do you see whether it's CLT or glulams or this world of engineered timber really providing opportunities for the construction world, whether that's how they can replace, say, steel beams, or what can CLT and heavy timber do that steel can't, and what are some of those benefits?
Yeah, I that's a very good
A
and
loaded question.
loaded question. When I was working at SOM and we were doing the initial timber tower study, and all those reports are free and available online, and we can link those in the documents, of course. And so the first inkling I had in my professional career, both of having an impact and having that impact recognized by a competitor in a negative way was we had just done this big research. And again, we're engineers, so theoretically we're materially agnostic, right? We're not rooting for one material over another. And we had done this study, and there was an op-ed in another material magazine that effectively took us to task about, how can you say this is so great and that this other material is so bad? So what I would say as an engineer, stepping aside from the mass timber, which I'll get to just in 30 seconds here, is I think in the AEC world, wherever we are, our goal is not the triumphing of one magical solution, but rather figuring out how to use each material as optimally as possible. Like, we're not going to go back to wood roads, right? There's not going to be wood planked roads. There's a place for concrete. There's a place for steel. There's a place for wood. And I think the broader discussion is, you know, how do we get the most out of that wood, right? And so similarly, again, you have to go back in time a little bit, but probably about 10 or 15 years ago, we had a series of insects that came through and killed a ton of wood. We had all this standing dead wood. And so as part of that same grant, there was the research and the grant said, well, we want you to design 100% wood buildings. And we said, okay, well, you can do that, sort of. I mean, there's always going to be non-wood in your wood buildings, just like there's no such thing as a concrete building. There's steel in that concrete. And so what we did was we redesigned it. And so I'm making up the numbers a little bit, but again, they're in that report. But generally, just for ease of conception, imagine that using the standing dead wood, which if we didn't use it, would rot, right? The wood needs to be harvested and used. So if we use that wood and we built 100% wood buildings, let's say we could have built 100 buildings, okay? Now imagine if we took that wood and we strategically used it to create mass timber, and we augmented it strategically with some concrete beams here and there, or some columns or things like that. You still, your building is still 80% wood, but now instead of only building 100 buildings, you could have built three times that, right? So you're taking the same amount of material and you're being much more efficient because we still need to build for a growing population and needs and all that kind of stuff. So with that context and caveat, I do think that wood in particular has a lot to offer for design, for mass timber in particular, for some of the reasons we've hit on and we can talk more about. Anytime we can take something out of the field and move it into a factory, and that gets talked about a lot. It's been talked about my whole career, probably a good chunk of Russ's career, the idea of we're going to do things modular and we're going to do them in a factory. And so what I think is important there is that is trickier, clearly, than just saying it sounds like. But anytime we can do that to some level, it's an improvement. And I think that mass timber in particular lends itself to that, because it doesn't require a rethinking of from scratch of how we build, but rather we can creatively build out components that plug and play with the existing way we build buildings. And so, you know, in as a mass timber supplier, so my background is engineering. And so as a technical director at a mass timber manufacturer, I think what's interesting is that manufacturing and mass timber in the US is still relatively new. And so one of the big challenges becomes, how do we partner with the design team so that we're making good decisions so that we can actually make a project buildable? And I think that wood, mass timber in particular, when we're brought in early, we can make a lot of decisions which seem like they're really small decisions. But those really small decisions up front can make a huge impact. And so I think that mass timber lets you leverage some of the best of the sort of manufacturing optimization, if you will, without having to go to the extreme of, well, you have to build the whole thing modular in a factory. And that's a discussion. And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm saying the nice part about mass timber is it lets us develop that. It lets us start where we're at. So we can kind of crawl, then we can walk, then we can run.
Thank you for that. And I know, Russ, you and I have talked a number of times about like what's needed in the workforce. Joshua, do you have any opinions on that, or, you know, like development that's needed in the construction industry to be more, per se, welcoming of an approach such as mass timber in a more broad application? I know from some of the projects that I visited or toured or heard about, I know even in our area where this is so big, it's still somewhat a challenge to figure out logistically. If you have, either of you have an opinion on that you want to speak on.
Yeah, I can do a quick one. And so when I hear that question, I think of two things. So when you talk about workforce development, I think of both sides. So we're a mass timber manufacturer, And I think there's always a greater need for development of workforce for the manufacturing side. So the skilled work that goes into that, the development of technicians and quality and all those things is super important and definitely something that I see, you know, as a professor, we'll tour different plants that make different things, whether it's steel studs or concrete or mass timber. Across the board, there's a real need for truly skilled labor in these manufacturing. So that's one thing. But the other one that I think you were probably actually intending to talk about is the idea of how do we help move the needle and make mass timber easy for everyone to adopt? And I think there's a big gap there. Everyone's got their version of a story where you have a design, the architect, the engineers, they've worked on it, and then it goes out to bid, and then the bid from the contractors on the mass timber is twice what the quote unquote traditional building is. And I don't think there's anything malicious there. I think there's just a reality that anytime something's new in the AEC industry, there's uncertainty. And so if you've never built something like that before, then you increase your contingencies and your costs and things like that. So I think that also ties back to, you know, Vagen Timbers in particular, our team, you know, so we create sustainable cross-laminated, glue-laminated products. But the totality of the product, and I'm going to talk about Vagen Timbers, but there's, you know, in our industry, you know, there are other partners as well. But so Vagen Timbers, our product is not just the mass timber. It's the partnering with. And so on our team, we have engineers, we have highly experienced GCs and superintendents, because creating the mass timber is one thing, but then figuring out how it gets installed, how are we waterproofing it? What are the connection tolerances? What's the staging look like? What are fireproofing considerations? What are the designs for the connections? Again, that comes up a lot for where I'm interacting with EORs and architects. So I think that Vagen takes the approach that the product that's being sold isn't just the mass timber, but rather partnering with that. And so if you can bring the manufacturer online soon in that project, small changes can make huge impacts later on. So I think that's the big one. And it almost sounds cliche, but sometimes things are cliche because they're right. You know, it's the idea of that cross-educating and just sharing that information. We've built or been part of lots of projects, and there's a lot of engineers, architects, and contractors out there who maybe they've been part of one or two. And so I think transferring that knowledge is beneficial.
Yeah, Shelby, I would also just add, I think we talked about this on a separate conversation before, but I think that there's a belief that there's kind of two paths. One is graduate from high school, go to work, and go to college and get a job, you know, someplace else. And there's this kind of, the different paths don't necessarily align too much. And I think that is one of the biggest mistakes we've made. I think that, especially with this audience, if you have some people that are listening to this that are, you know, younger in their careers and trying to get it going, we're trying to pursue some internships that are people in the field, but just besides like somebody that wants to get involved with mass timber, that wants to work for a summer while they're in college, and whether it's a technical degree or a full-blown, you know, postgraduate degree, it doesn't really matter. I think that if you're in your area of work or close to it, and you have time in the summer that you want to dedicate to differentiating yourself, you need to either get a formalized internship or go to work for these companies. And I think that we try to do that. We try to hire people in the summer to do other things. And some of them are, you know, grading lumber, separating boards, stacking boards. It's a part of the process. One of the things that I think that people miss is not only does that help you in your area of education as you're going to finish your degree, certainly did me. I had that opportunity all the way through because my family owned the business, but I've also seen it with others that have grown up here in high school and then have come back from college. And then they tell us later when they go to work someplace else, boy, those 2 summers that I worked at the mill or I worked at the CLT plant were invaluable to me, because when they were talking about widgets, I knew that this was actually a piece of wood going through a process. Not only that, it serves you so well when you get put into a position where you have to work with somebody else that took the other path, and you realize that they are smart, intelligent, and impactful, and very necessary for you to get the job done that you need to get done. So I encourage those that are listening to this, that are going through their education, to go out, seek out internships if they're available, or just go to work for a company that, and it may not be directly related, but get out there and not only get some money in your pocket as you're, you know, spending a lot of money on your education, but you're going to get invaluable pieces that you can apply to it. And then if you're a manufacturer out there that, you know, is struggling with workforce, and if you are out there and you're not struggling with workforce, I'd really like to hear how you're doing it, because everybody is. But I would reach out to the universities, the technical colleges, and try to set something up and be more open and purposeful in it. That's why this is such a big deal, because the story that goes with it is so unique and so beneficial, but it's not limited to just wood. We have to work with all these materials and find the optimal mixture of materials to make the buildings function and to be as eco-friendly as possible and most cost-effective, because that's always a big collaboration of ideas and topics that need to come together to create the kind of buildings that we need and what we want. And Joshua touched on it very well. You know, our website, bogandtimbers.com. We're both very active on social media. We've got a growing library of videos on YouTube and other places. And we think we have a great opportunity in front of us to identify forests that probably in the past would have been overlooked for their commercial value. Go in there and look at them for their environmental values, and how can we reduce wildfire risk, reduce the smoke in our environment, and turn them into beautiful buildings. That's what we're going to try to do. So thanks, Shelby, for having us today.
Very well said, and thank you for being here. As both Joshua and Russ have mentioned, we will be making all of those links available in both the show notes and our companion document, which you can find on the Integrated Design and Construction website at idcl.wsu.edu. Russ and Joshua, thank you so much for being here. If there's anything that you guys want to add, we're more than happy to put those in the show notes. And I hope you guys have a good one.